What is up? It's Tuesday night, time for another episode of Inside the Game. Episode 59 today, January 22nd, 2013. And I'll tell you what, guys, after the episode that we had last week, which, of course, in an effort to completely blacklist Slasher, we're not going to talk about at all. An interesting episode that ended up bringing up a lot more discussion, and I think we're going to be switching gears a little bit this week and talking about some other controversial stuff that we didn't necessarily bring up, but someone else did, and now we're going to talk about it, which is kind of nice, not necessarily being the source of all that stuff. But what's up? Been a long week, but hello, welcome back, DaMuslim.
Hello. I'm good. Thank you very much.
Not in the lair.
Back in England for now.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. How you liking over there?
It's ridiculously cold. Like, I thought it was cold in Arizona after living there for like 5 months in a row, and then sailed across the ocean. And everything's icy. And British people are known for being quite whingy. But
what?
Like whiny.
What does that word
whingy
mean?
Like whiny, but even worse. Like they whinge, you know. Like,
is that stingy and whiny combined?
I don't really know, but just imagine like lots of British people sitting there with their tea and their like little fingers up, being like, "Oh, this snow!" Like there's like inches of snow. Like I literally mean like this much, and schools and airports have shut down because of it. So yeah, just being whingy. But yeah, I'm having a good time so far.
Being whingy, that's awesome. Adra, hello. What's up? How's it going?
Hello. Oh, it's really good. Just being nice and lazy and streaming a bunch. I don't actually have anything to do, so get to relax. Except for this, of course.
Nice. And Jeff, hello, sir. How are you?
Good, good. I've been playing some HOTS recently, and I'm really, really enjoying it. A lot of fun. And I'm excited to do this episode because I think the last one, the conversations about that episode literally just today, maybe yesterday, started to slow down. Holy shit, journalism in esports is apparently a hot-button tough topic.
Dude, it was, like, everywhere, man. Like, Penny Arcade and PC World and, you know, like, actually, Slasher said something to me before Live on 3 that I was actually like, dude, you should be pissed about that, man. Because Slasher is one of those guys that's been trying to get the Destructoids, the Kotakus, like, all these big gaming guys to be like, hey, check this shit out. And, you know, when it comes up, it's like cheating in League of Legends.
I know.
And, you know, this guy stabbed another dude for taking his virtual in-game item and you know, shit like that. And here they actually they expose the culture in a positive way. But it's just kind of like, Slasher, come on, man. Like, you need to get them, use this as momentum to get them to talk more about esports if they want to look at it. Anyway, what are we talking about tonight? On the docket, some of the hot items are MLG announcing no open bracket. We're going to talk about that shortly. Of course, the final Wings of Liberty GSL Code S begins. Idra, you were going to you wanted to bring up a really great topic, and that is the sort of how we handle toxic players in the community. And in relation to some of the banning practices that we've seen Riot do in League of Legends, even on a professional level, think that's great. Thread on Team Liquid about teaching chess to a StarCraft 2 GM. I just thought we'd talk about that generally. And then finally, video game violence, where this morning I was on a radio show to kind of talk about that exact thing with a friend and colleague, John Clark, formerly GGL Alien. And it was, you know, it was good. I got to tell you, traditional radio, it kind of sucks, guys. Like,
it can, yeah.
You talk for 7 minutes. And then they're like, okay, let's do the Fox News update. And they're like, beep, 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 beep. I'm on the traffic copter, and it looks really bad on Dodge Street. And it's like, I live in fucking Nebraska. So it's like, really? Is there that much traffic to report on, Judy? Anyway.
Got some cows on the road again.
Fucking hey, man. Those wheat fields, they're like growing into the road, man. You watch out for that shit. Anyway, and so then they'd come back after 6 minutes. And we'd do like another 9-10 minutes. And then I'm like, God damn it, I love internet radio or talk show, whatever.
It's better.
I don't know where I was going with that. Oh, we talked about video game and violence. We're going to continue that discussion. First and foremost, you guys just saw it. The Muslim was like, oh my God, it's so great. Let me grab my tea and crumpets and watch this Heart of the Swarm cinematic one more time. It looks badass. It's kind of like a way to hype it up a little bit. What'd you guys think?
It looked really
yeah, I just recently watched it, and like 10 minutes ago, and wow. It made me like feel really happy about the game that I play, and just watching it, like, I'm kind of sad it's not a movie coming out, like a 2-hour, 3-hour epic kind of thing, because the fight scenes in there, even though it's only like 2 minutes long, they just look some of the best I've ever seen, and I'm not just hyping it up because it's the game that I play, but no, it just looked fantastic, and Blizzard definitely know how to do cinematics.
Yes, they do. God damn yeah. it, they do them well.
Yeah, when the battlecruiser fell from the sky, like, you guys heard my reaction. It looks really, really cool.
And then you wonder how a pack of mutas even takes down the battlecruiser. And suddenly my lore is fucking crushed. What about you and Control?
They've always done an amazing job, and honestly, one of the things I kind of, I don't know, I was critical of the first, you know, StarCraft II Wings of Liberty was that I didn't feel like it had a lot of those kind of videos. They used a lot of in-game graphics for cutscenes, which I thought kind of sucked, because I remember back in Brood War and even Warcraft, all the Warcrafts, just the amazing videos that would come out. Like, I think it was Warcraft 3 that had the orc fighting like a knight in the middle of a field or something like that, but it was they one had of the coolest the, videos
with
ever.
The Frost, or who was the guy with the Frost? Sorry, some Warcraft 3 lore guy is going to be like,
yeah.
Oh my god, it's
that guy sitting on the throne and stuff like that. That shit. And Diablo, actually, Diablo 2 had amazing videos. So I just, that part of Blizzard has always been, in my opinion, one of the coolest parts.
It's been really good.
One of you guys are click clacking.
Dude,
really
it sounds
well.
Like Ooh. The Muslim's fucking making his own cinematics over there, man.
Oh, my bad.
Like, oh shit, yeah, I gotta rotate this just a little bit. And, yeah. It definitely does the job, though, of getting you excited, you know, for the game, even if it's going to be like, oh, it's fire into single player and play away. And they do have over on Team Liquid some pretty good Heart of the Swarm. I'm guessing that this stuff came out a while ago and they've just recently lifted the embargo on it. But they talk a little bit about the preview. They don't really talk about anything multiplayer related, except I think that this is kind of cool and worth a mention on the show. I'd love to get your guys' thoughts on it. They're doing two things in an effort to take someone from a campaign to a multiplayer game, which we all know is like kind of a downfall in StarCraft 2. Is either you made the jump and went in, dived, or else you're kind of fucked. They made a training mode that says they have like training missions and tutorials to outline the fundamentals of competitive play. And then they help you with things to remind you to, you know, drop mules or inject and chrono boost, shit like that. And then they do matchmaking with an AI, which is based off of how you played. They will set you up with like the perfect, you know, the perfect temperature AI. What are you guys' thoughts on that in terms of like, let's get casual players into the competitive side of the game?
I love it. Go ahead, Greg.
That's definitely a move in the right direction. We're going on from like the little blurbs on the loading screen where the mutalists are fast units. You should use them for harassment. So I think anything that gives some kind of stepping stone, because we see so many posts about ladder anxiety and stuff like that. Like if you're at all aware of what you're doing, it's pretty intimidating to go out there and try and play people for the first time. So anything at all that provides a stepping stone there is definitely a move in the right direction. And we'll just have to see how high quality they are before we judge how good it actually is.
Sure.
I think this is one of the best moves they've ever made, because one of the big alienating factors about StarCraft is it's always been so difficult to play, and it's so competitive and it's so cerebral that a lot of people, when they play it, they play the single player because there's this big hubbub. You know, everyone's talking about HOTS, or everyone was talking about Wings of Liberty, but then they play it and they're like, whoa, this is way too intense for me. So as Greg said, any step that kind of connects and bridges the two and eases them into that transition, it's going to pick up more people. It's going to interest them more. And the reason I said this is the best way they've done it is because in the past, they've looked to make StarCraft more easy and more mechanically less difficult. So that was their way of trying to rope in the less competitive people, or the people that are like teetering on the like casual versus competitive and just wanting to play some 1v1. This allows those people to do that. And the other nice thing about it, too, is that StarCraft 2 is a very difficult social game, so if you don't know somebody that plays it because they're having a tough time finding interest in, or they find it too scary, you're kind of alone. The chat channel system is still pretty vacant that way, but with this, even if you are alone, you can still actually do some research without knowing about your Team Liquids or without having friends that play the game, and I think that, too, is a really good thing.
What about you, DeMuslim?
I think these two pretty much covered it. I haven't really looked at it until like you mentioned it, but yeah, I mean, StarCraft II currently is just a very lonely experience, and the jump from, you know, doing whatever campaign into playing somebody like life and death kind of situation and stats are on the line and stuff, it's just, it's pretty crazy. So yeah, just helping anybody make the first few steps or so, rather than making a huge leap at first, I think that's really awesome.
I mean, it's certainly like Idris said, it's a step in the right direction, where as Jeff, what you kind of explained is half a step. It's like they made the game easier from its successor, and that was one way to rope them in. But you still, like, putting rocks in front of a base and being like, well, good, if you can't break the rocks before 10 minutes, then, you know, there's never going to be a problem. And whoever thought that was an acceptable way to... I mean, how many bad habits did that create in people who were like, yeah, you know what? I'll play through my 75,000 rock training games, and then I'll know how to play this game. It's like, incorrect. This is right. This, you know, and you can just kind of barely see from the screenshot, you guys. But like, for example, they show appropriately Zerg, and up there it says, you know, main objectives, birth a queen, create Zerglings, and then mutate a Roach Warren can be seen there. But it doesn't like have it on a supply count or anything, you know, with build order makers out there and stuff. It's surprising to me that they couldn't even take that additional step. And maybe this is just part one. Who knows?
What I find really funny is that like everyone who's actually on Blizzard is such a bad player that they could very easily fuck stuff like that up and like give them the wrong advice. And I think it would be absolutely hilarious. For that.
Do you think that Blizzard just needs to hire someone like a professional,
a competent
gamer?
Player? Yeah. Yes. They need to hire one from every race and have them at least involved in the balancing process.
It's
and then
weird to me that
like
hasn't been done.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting.
You know what they could do, too, is like they'd be like, hey, guys, we're offering a salary of $1,500 a month to come here and do this. And there'd be players who are like, drop everything. Like, and they'd go do it. They'd have these guys that would do that, absolutely.
And, you know, we've now seen, like, esports coordinator. Esports, yeah. You know, it actually is surprising to me that you can foster, you know, a competitive game like that and really work on it, you know, using obviously some external stats and stuff. But, yeah, it's surprising that, or at least like continuous focus groups or something, since there is so much great talent out there. But anyhow, what's that?
Well, yeah, like in Wings of Liberty, the beta, when that first came out, I remember... For European players, they initially, like, when the game was first released, they used to send out emails to, like, a specific group of players, and it was quite a large group. Like, they had maybe three or four players of each race just in Europe alone, and we all used to give, like, our input and stuff, and I don't know who they talk to now. You always hear about them kind of speaking with professional players, but I don't really think they do. I remember at Gamescom one time, David Kim rearranged us all to go into this room and talk about the beta, like Hotspeed, before it came out, and some of the ideas that he came up with, like, to kind of quote him, he said his idea for Terran against Protoss is now for Protoss to be the harasser. This is before Hotspeed, so just have that in mind, but he wanted Warhounds to kill everything, pretty much, and he wanted Battle Hellions to just kill Zealots, and we were kind of sat there, like, me and Grubby looked at each other and just like, what? Do you think that's going to work? And he's like, yeah. Well, yeah, I think it's really good. I think it's really good. And, like, so I don't think they really have much of an idea, but they did talk about hiring players that were, like, at least diamond level for balancing the game. So, yeah. It was awesome.
Well, you know, baby steps, guys. Baby steps. Because, you know, the other big thing that is included with this stuff is, of course, the skins for units.
Yeah.
Although they could just make the game free for play and sell that shit, which, you know, free to play and sell it. But a customizable Observer UI is cool. It's something that's going to be really awesome. Watch for another rat race as far as coverage is concerned, with like MLG comes up with their configuration and then DreamHack figures out some fucking super badass thing to do. And then IPL puts both of them together and creates the Super Observer UI. So
hey, man,
it might sound silly, but I'm excited for that shit, dude. I really am.
I don't know. What does that do to Adibis's job? To me, that feels like a...
Adibis is like,
gotta be kind of scary, man.
Yes.
Is he?
I don't know. Like, I'm going to put so much time. No, I mean, imagine
it's
he's
like more he can do.
Yes, he's like going to be bringing shit up, and it's going to be like he'll be in Minority Report and pulling fucking production bars over here and moving it around. It'll be great. It'll be great.
He's like, they raised the skill the skill ceiling for observing, so now he's like completely unglued and becomes the best thing we've ever seen.
Like level up with giant glowing aura around him. And suddenly he can see the future and shit. It'll be amazing. Anyway, some other things they talk about the campaign, but you can go over there to Team Liquid and actually read it. Let's talk about MLG No Open Bracket, a bomb that was dropped a few days ago by Desro in kind of a, I don't even know, it was a conversation that was taking place on Twitter where he insinuated that there was no open bracket, therefore he wouldn't be able to compete in an MLG. Confirmed via Twitter by Sundance that says, don't worry guys, more details coming. But it still was enough information, I think, to raise some questions. And the short of it is, MLG says that there's not going to be an open bracket at the upcoming MLG events. So first and foremost, it's like throw out the pros and the cons of this. Anyone wanna start?
I'd say the first con is the way they handled it for like Sundance to just come out and tweet no open bracket, no other details, no backup plan, no like no reasoning, no nothing. I think it's just pretty terrible to do it that way.
Yeah, he kind of kept saying too, like trust me, guys, it's a good thing, and he's alluding to it only being one event. And I have to agree with Greg. Like this is actually a pretty massive thing. Since the very beginning of MLG with StarCraft II, there has always been an open bracket. So this is not a small thing for them to be like, yeah, no open bracket, but don't panic. We've got good news, too. There's nobody on the – I mean, there's like five guys across the 10 threads or whatever. They're like, everyone just calm down. Sundance said it's going to be okay. Like everyone else is just like, wow, this is a really bad sign. I mean, their tournament in New York kind of came and went without a word, and now they're not doing an open bracket at an MLG Dallas. Like, I can't help but to say that feels like the wrong, like to kick off Dallas with no open bracket seems like challenging the rest of the year. I can't imagine this getting spun into good news. How does that happen?
What pro
could possibly come from this where they're like, oh, wow, that is a good thing that there's not an open bracket.
To be fair to them, the reason is just because of the release date of HOTS. Like it's happening 3 days before, and I guess they don't want to deal with the issues that would cause like 3 days to actually get an account on the game or for people to be comfortable with it and just like all the logistical problems that could introduce. That's the reason they're not doing it, but it's just a gigantic change.
That's the reason they're saying, like, Greg. Like, as far as I'm concerned, they still are going to run a StarCraft II tournament, so those issues are going to be dealt with no matter what.
I don't know. I think there's a much bigger difference when it's a bunch of pro players. You have them everything pre-confirmed. You've had them already qualify in some way or another. It'll be much easier to handle than trying to have a 200-person open bracket, people you don't know, you know, not enough admins to actually talk to each of them individually without introducing massive delays as you try and deal with each issue. I can understand it, and I think it's pretty reasonable just from, like, an event management point of view. The best solution, obviously, would just be do it a few weeks later, but they book these really far in advance, so they don't actually have that option.
So from a player perspective, obviously you've got one set of players who's like, word, I'm in. You know, I'm pre-qualified somehow, or I've won an MLG, or I don't know exactly what the qualifications are going to be for playing. But then you've got the other side who are like, hey, I'm an up and comer. I go to every MLG Open tournament to try to see how I can do and improve my game. And you know, this has yielded some really good players. So from that perspective, does anyone have like a concern that no open bracket is going to stunt the growth of any up-and-comers in the
Yeah, I mean, I'd community. Like to just say, like, when you have an open bracket player that does really well through the open bracket, or you have a really solid player, let's say SKT Rain or something that's in the open bracket, that's a storyline in itself to see how well they do. Or when a player falls instantly into the open bracket and then it's just like, wow, they're way up. There's so many stories that come out of that, and usually the main stories are because of the open bracket and the loser bracket, and I find that sad. Like, that's going to be something that I'm going to miss in the future. I remember starting off in the open bracket, and say if I finished like 15th place or whatever, I class that as like a massive achievement, and just most of the threads on forums and such were about foreigners doing really well and such, and if a lot of those guys aren't going to be able to participate in the tournament itself purely because there isn't going to be an open bracket, that's a lot that it's missing. Like, are they replacing the PCs that they once had? Like, is...
I, again, this is a very little information, just that, as the Twitter said, no open bracket for StarCraft II in Dallas. So you just have to kind of assume they're going to have a set number of players with, you know, some sort of entry through, I'm assuming, previous MLG events. You know, I'd throw out there probably, like, region-based or whatever. So then I shift gears a little bit because, you know, no open bracket, so they're going to have maybe a more focused, qualified tournament. So from an audience/fan perspective, do you think that that event improves at all?
No.
No?
No, I think it's been proven in the past with their other events that with the open bracket, you have a larger group of people that were sent that otherwise didn't qualify for other reasons. Like, Europeans don't go to a lot of MLGs, so being qualified for it or something like that would be a little bit more difficult. Then, of course, the Koreans that just want, they are now newly traveled Koreans. Like, let's say Parting comes to an MLG. That would be an epic, epic storyline, whereas otherwise, perhaps Parting isn't qualified. I mean, we'll find out who's qualified and who's not. I guess my big problem is that when you have the all-encompassing open bracket and also the people that qualify, you get two birds, one stone with that. You're going to get the guaranteed amazing pros that qualified, but then with the open bracket, you're going to get the people that would go and make it through there. I mean, like 75% of the champions the last 2 or 3 years from MLG StarCraft II have been from the open bracket.
I think it could make it more exciting in one way. I imagine that since... Well, it's weird because I don't know what's actually public and how everything's going to work. Like, they haven't told us what the qualifier system's going to be yet either. So we're not entirely sure, but I'm almost positive they'll have people qualifying from every region, which means we're much more likely to have more, just like more foreigners at a higher level, more foreigners competing against other foreigners at a higher level. And a lot, like more often than not, fans find that more exciting than, you know, faceless Korean versus faceless Korean in the top six and on. So it's artificial and it's not as legitimate of a tournament, but if it gives the foreigners the opportunity to place higher and play for longer, I think fans could enjoy that more than an actual tournament. But yeah, overall, it's like not, it cannot be argued that taking away the open bracket's a bad thing for the tournament. But again, yeah, their hands
forced.
For a
second, I thought you were doing that, and I was like,
no.
You're supposed to be smart.
No. I'm just saying, yeah. It's like if there is a silver lining, it's going to be that, I think.
I hear you. And I want to be optimistic. I mean, Adam Apicella has been blasting up and down on Twitter, crying about how, you know, they're changing the format and they're doing a new stage. And it's really exciting. It's really nice. It's the biggest reworking of MLG's presentation since, like, 2000. I'm pulling this number completely out of my ass, but I want to say, like, 2005 or something. It's a huge revamp. And it is gorgeous. It is amazing. MLG is going to put on a better show. It's going to look like a studio-presented show, and I think that's really cool. But this move, and again, we'll just have to speculate on this because there's no way Sundance comes out and says, well, financially we couldn't do it. Or what Greg's saying, maybe they do say, well, logistically we just think it'd be too difficult to run an open bracket with HOTS. My personal opinion is that I don't really accept that. But I guess the bottom line is I don't like this message as the first MLG. I don't like this stealing the storyline. I don't like us starting, because 2012 was a year of like stabilization and downgrade, if anything. It was where StarCraft II had its throne taken by LoL, and the field was complicated by Dota being out there as well as a very viable game that a lot of people can definitely play.
I mean,
and now in 2013, it's taking a step back.
Even before then, if you think about the early months of 2012, weren't these same sort of things being said about the arenas that MLG announced? Granted, they were a supplement to the main event, but I mean, you know, I remember people saying there's like, you know, a smaller event, less players. Yeah, you get to see this, but then there's no crowd. So like the back and forth on that sounds a little similar to what I'm hearing from you, aside from the
obvious
crowd.
Yeah, but the word supplement is really important to me because
okay, fair enough.
It's their main show. MLG has always been an open bracket tournament that puts on a big ass show for a huge live audience. And then they tried to branch out and do something where it was more premier. It was behind a paywall. You know, they definitely experimented with that. So when you actually mess with your bread and butter, that's when I start to get really worried. Because MLG, I mean, we've been saying all of last year, it's like, calm down, guys. StarCraft II is not the number one game, but we still have your MLGs, your IEMs, your DreamHacks, your IPLs. But now, I mean, again, I don't want to sound too much like the sky is falling, because he's come out and said, he's all but said, this is just for Dallas. He has not said it's for every one of their events. He hasn't said the other way as well, but that's what I'm getting from it. So I'm just troubled by the storyline from it, is I guess what I'm saying.
Fair enough.
It feels weird playing devil's advocate for them, but I'm almost positive this is solely because there's even been a tweet saying, I think it was Adam, saying, remember, this is 3 days after HOTS. There's surrounding circumstances, et cetera, et cetera. I'm almost positive it's that, and they'll have the open bracket back, or at least a public, like, a way for everyone to play at the future main MLGs.
I mean, you do make a good point as well, and echoed by you from Adam, and that is the fact that 3 days after a release, that's kind of brutal. Like, we don't know what kind of shit
you know what
happen
I'd want
on
then?
Release and whatnot, but what?
I'm not sitting in that room, obviously, and I think this is something that would come closer to 50% of people disagree with me, but if you're 3 days post-release, I say you do your final Wings of Liberty tournament and you broadcast the shit out of that.
Dude, you know that every person who makes any sort of decision and knows about the space is like, 3 days after release, first official fucking tournament of the game. It'll be remembered.
I think removing your open bracket is a huge, like, that's where if it was as simple as they kept the same tournament, but obviously I don't know how I'm going to try to word this, but I guess the bottom line is for me it's a huge factor to remove the open bracket. Like, that's basically saying all that rhetoric that Sundance and everybody was talking about, how 2012 we're going to help the little guy, the North American player, we're going to give them more of a stage, and then in 2013 they're like, invite, you know, or qualified only. And no open bracket, but don't worry, we might come back around to that little guy. I think that kind of hurts their integrity.
I think we have to wait and see until we know what their qualifier system is, like how exactly they are going to pick the players who do get to go, before we say just how bad it is. Because it's possible they have a really in-depth qualifier system, and like anyone who had any possible chance of mattering in the open bracket will have a shot to get there through online play. And that's still not as good as having the actual open bracket. But right. I think then it becomes worthwhile to actually have HOTS. But if they just have a half-assed, you know, anyone who's famous gets to try, and it's just the big names only, and no one who, well, a lot of people who deserve a chance don't get one, then I think I would agree with you, despite the fact that I'm really happy it's HOTS. And I think it would be better to have Wings of Liberty and have a more legitimate tournament. So I think it all comes down to how good their qualifier system is.
I could agree with that.
There's a lot of good. There's a lot of good examples to pull from as well. You know, just
and
not HOTS
necessarily... is a showstopper. I mean, sorry to interrupt you, man.
No. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I'm struggling with it. But if you did run a Wings of Liberty tournament, that would be the like most overshadowed thing ever, next to HOTS release. So I could see why that's like just not even a viable option. I would just like to discourse with people. And I wish we could hear – I'm excited for the answer from MLG, because to be honest with you, like I said, and I know I'm beating a dead horse here, but dropping the open bracket is like – that would be like DreamHack putting Apollo in a fucking tuxedo and telling him never to curse again, as far as I'm concerned. Like, if Apollo is like – he was like, I think this is going to be a bloody good fucking tournament. And then someone grabs him and pulls him away and sits down, and it's like, boss DreamHack, and he's like, sorry for him cussing. It's unacceptable. Back to you guys with 15 minutes of commercials. That would be the same thing to me, is when you drop the open bracket for MLG.
I think Sean in a tuxedo is a good idea, though. He'd look like a little penguin.
He could work it.
And he has to try to talk in an American accent, which if you've never heard is freaking hilarious.
His accent's already pretty Americanized, and it was like Welsh to begin with. I wish Ben were on. He could talk for like 20 minutes about Sean's accent.
Yeah. Good. And Ben is kind of, you know, UK internet man. What are you supposed to do? So
I know it wasn't on the docket, but a little segue from that.
Yes.
Can we discuss how IPL is doing Wings of Liberty tournament instead
Please
of Heart
do.
Of the Swarm?
Please.
And how dumb that is.
Edumacate us, Idra.
Well, I mean, there's not much to say. It's just they're doing that. They're going to have a HOTS invitational or a small HOTS tournament at the event, which is good at least. But, you know, it's 2 or 3 weeks after. I can't imagine they haven't planned out so far ahead that they already made these decisions and it was unchangeable by the time the HOTS release date was announced. And it's just, it's going to be so terrible and boring. No one's going to care about it at all anymore. Every other major tournament is already going to switch.
Is there something new, Greg? Because I heard it was wall qualifier into a HOTS tournament.
No,
which I thought was silly.
No, they've announced, that's what I thought it was before, but I'm almost positive they announced the main is Wings of Liberty. because I know they're going to have a supplementary tiny HOTS tournament.
Now that you say that, I think I remember hearing that. That is a terrible idea. Yeah.
I mean, you know, right now, the interest level in Wings of Liberty is obviously waning, and partially it's due to the fact that Heart of the Swarm is just right around the corner. So, you know, Wings of Liberty is not Brood War, man. You can't just keep going and expect people to be like, God, you know, like.
Momentum. Well, it'd be like playing vanilla StarCraft when Brood War came out. It's like, you know. That's going far too far back. Sorry, I went over some people's head with that. I guess the bottom line is that.
Especially given that we're already going to have an MLG and maybe some other major tournaments running HOTS before it. This, I can't imagine.
How many players want to juggle two games? Dude, we're supposed to be playing HOTS in the AHGL, and I was a salty little bitch when I found out that we had to play Wings of Liberty.
I was like, fuck that
noise is ridiculous. So I can't imagine, like, you know, you guys, I would be like, no.
Then you complain about some guy who, like, ate racks.
Oh, my God. I get to rant about it a little bit?
Do it.
It's like,
yeah.
Check this out. When we played in Season 2 of AHGL, we were so outmatched. Like, we played against guys that were better. But you know what happened is it produced really freaking great games because we were, like, clawing, just trying to, you know, and there was never any like crazy shit. It was just a level of respect that I was like, holy crap, I didn't expect to have that much fun in the league. 2 weeks into the season now, and it's just kind of been bullshit. And I'm just like, really? Like, these are B team StarCraft teams from these companies, and this is what it's going to be? Like, I paid to participate in like 8 racks games? Like, come on. It's not, you know, and then playing Wings of Lit. So anyway, rant mode off, salty. I'm not salty anymore. I don't care. But actually, I really do. As a player, you would not balance both, right?
Yeah.
No, I've already decided not to. Okay. Like, I'm already playing full-time HOTS.
Okay.
Yeah, it's sad for me, too. I mean, IPL, I have to say, IPL 5 last year, probably the show of the year. Absolutely stunning. The bar set really high. The expectations really high. And it seems weird to me to not ride that high. Like it's the better risk, it's the better gamble to run a Heart of the Swarm tournament that close to release and then work with the technical difficulties that everybody will be working with, including Blizzard. They don't want to fuck up their release game on that stage. Than to have Wings of Liberty go right into and past the release of Heart of the Swarm. I think it's like killing your own thunder, basically.
And they have at least a week, maybe 2 weeks before before they would actually get there, before the tournament would actually happen after release. So that's time to work out some kinks. I think for them the bigger problem is their qualification system has always been a bit more open, and they just chose not to do the Wings of Liberty qualifiers into HOTS. But I think even that would be better. I think the event is just going to be so underwhelming with like how much interest there will be in HOTS and how little there will be in Wings of Liberty at that point. I think they're sabotaging themselves.
And, you know, I mean, the timing of it all, it's not like it actually comes at a great place where it's just going to land perfectly for every single organization. You know, MLG typically does their first event like in the third or fourth month of the year. For them, it like falls in perfectly. If you're running qualifiers for the first few months into a major event that coincides with the release of a game, you have to make that tough decision. Unfortunately, my opinion is that they're going to have to change it. Like, it's going to be crazy because they're going to have to run qualifiers in Wings of Liberty, but I feel like they're eventually going to realize that running a Wings of Liberty tournament is going to be a really bad idea. And it's even more so if HOTS turns out to be great. If, like, the first televised, you know, internet-televised HOTS tournaments end up really turning heads and produce some great games, which they likely will just because it'll be so new, it's going to just devalue that gameplay even more.
You really think IPL will switch? I think there's no way at this point. I think they're pretty much locked into it.
I mean,
like they've already
started
to run qualifiers, and
right,
they already have other tournaments planned.
It wouldn't be the first time in esports history it happened.
I would find that very surprising.
World Cyber Games 2005, man. All of the qualifications for Counter-Strike were in 1.6. You know what they played in Singapore on the finals? They played Source. They played fucking Source, man. And you talk to anyone who played that game, they're like two completely different games. So, you know, that's like the extreme.
It should be legal to like show up and But as I say that, I remember one WC year, I think it was like 2010 or 11, they actually slashed the prize pool at the tournament itself. Like, they announced it that weekend. They're like, it was for Counter-Strike again, too. I think they went from like $2,000 for first place to like 500 split between four guys or whatever it was. Like,
that's atrocious, right? JP just said, if IPL did that, it's social suicide. Why would they? It's like, what's worse, that or actually just knowing that you're going to have a tournament where maybe a few thousand people are going to tune into?
I don't know. I think, I mean, for us, I absolutely agree. But to borrow Greg's term real quick, devil's advocate, I think one thing to say is that, yes, the tournament will definitely have that storyline, but like pushing off a lot of the hype and excitement, which I think is too bad. But I think most of the Koreans will go right into Heart of the Swarm, having played almost exclusively Wings of Liberty. And the Koreans that attend that IPL will still put on a fantastic show. And I think people will tune in for high-level gameplay. But obviously, I think you could actually do the math. Or not, you couldn't actually do the math. But I would speculate it's something like 20% of the viewership will be gone from that tournament. Whereas if they would have done it in the current game, it would have been one of the biggest shows of the year again. And I'm going to stop talking just as DG Week can yell at his kid.
Hey,
punk trying to be louder than me over here. Not acceptable. It'll be,
you are mini weed.
It'll be interesting. So we still have no the Muslim, which I don't really want to go on to this next topic without
him. Terrence, man.
Terrence
on Inside the Game. They keep fucking floating their buildings elsewhere when we're trying to have a good game.
Man, I don't know, man. I don't know. But let's see, 37 minutes into the, all right, you know, we'll give the Muslim one more segment. Let's talk about this teaching chess to an SC2 GM. Did you guys see this by chance?
I have the thread open. I'm not sure what we're talking about with regards to
It's just like, to me, there's not like much to talk about other than just the concept of it itself. And watch that I'll never be able to find this fucking thread again because I had
I have it
open. I love the analogy of Chess and StarCraft 2.
Talking about like some of the same thought processes, the idea of knowing strategies, identifying openings on the board and being able to react accordingly and thinking ahead. And to me, I just find it fascinating. Partially, it's because how many people make that comparison of chess. But did you have it? Can you? Okay, there we go. Okay, I'll try to find it here. Did you read it at all?
I'm skimming through it now. I skimmed through it before. I'm looking through it now.
Okay. Teaching. It was on. I saw it on Team Liquid, and I know it was posted on Reddit as well. Chess. There we go. And it was posted within a thread. But have you guys ever played chess before? Ever?
Yeah.
I mean, like, competitively? Like,
yep.
ELO ranked and shit?
No, I was terrible, but I was still, I played.
Partially what he talks about is, like, that comparison of ELO and the steps that you have to make to, like, reach a certain rating, and like playing against him just to find out what his skill level is like. But it's an ongoing series here. Let me bring it up. But I guess I don't have anything really to say about it other than I think that it's fucking cool and people should check it out. I don't know.
Like Jeff intimated, I really, really hate the chess to StarCraft comparison. Like so many times you'll have someone from a more mainstream media ask a pro like how just to explain the game in really basic terms, and a lot of people will say, oh, it's kind of like chess except real time. But it's really, really not. It's real time versus turn-based. It's partial information versus total information. And I mean, there's the whole, just like the entire mechanical portion, it just, that's non-existent in StarCraft, and that makes up for so much and gives you so many more options. And there's just so much more stuff that can happen. It's, I don't know. I think.
Okay,
it's
how
a
about
very,
this?
Very
Greg.
Basic.
The strategy parts of the two games lend themselves to each other, I would say.
If chess had Fog of War, would it be a better analogy? No, seriously.
Oh, there's your queen.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, that because that's one of the two biggest things are the turn-based versus real-time, which, you know, the mechanics play into that. You know, just how fast you do stuff, and actually the hand-eye coordination aspect of it. That's just a whole other set of skills. And then the other big thing is partial versus total information. Like, if you don't know what your opponent's doing, you can't plan for everything. You can't actually think X moves ahead because so many different possible things could be happening. You know, that dulls the strategic aspect of StarCraft and actually introduces quite a bit more luck. But it's a huge difference. I'd say those are the two biggest things, the real-time versus turn-based and then the partial information.
It goes on to talk a little bit about understanding the initial mechanics. So, you know, maybe there's some sort of correlation, at least from learning, since they do have some comparisons. But I'd kind of agree with you anyway. A good read if you just kind of into that thing. And
the whole thing is interesting. Yeah.
I do believe that, you know, on players who are able to play at a top level, I mean, intellectually – being able to make those decisions and, like you said, like predict based off of the information that you have or that you don't have. Like, I find it fascinating. I always found, you know, different games offer different skill sets. I think I come from a Quake background, and, you know, the only intellectual skill that you had aside from predicting your opponent was being able to time items. And I was always fascinated by CZM, who was able to, like, time, you know, 7-8 items in his head at one time. And I literally did a cast with him where he would be like, okay, well, the shotgun's going to come up in about 24 seconds, so he should swing around to the red armor, which will come up in 5, and then he'll go over, get these 2 health bubbles, be back up to full, and they'll probably go plasma. And, like, to watch then the player do exactly what he said, like, or, you know, that level of skill I appreciate so much. It's one of the reasons why I love so many different types of games, because you can find that level of appreciation, you know, across the board. But it's
like
really
Guitar Hero, man. Like, the speed...
Dude, can you play fucking that shit? I can. I mean, I can. I'm pretty good. But then I watch them play, like, Through Flame and Fire or whatever the hell that song is, and I'm just like, fuck that, you know? It's only so many hours in a day, Jeff. Dude, see, someone says Quake and intellectual in the same sentence. If you can't even recognize that, then you're a fucking jackass. How about that in the same fucking sentence? Dickweed. Fucking talk to CZM, and when you find out that he fucking loved Quake so much that he built a railgun in real life, then you'll be like, oh, I'm a fucking dumbass. Yeah, the guy built a fucking railgun in real life. He made it work. Yes. I mean,
That's pretty cool.
I asked him if it could kill someone, and he said it's not likely that he would need the power of many more magnets in order to be able to do it.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that, A, he knew that it wouldn't kill someone. He was like, it may puncture the skin, but not enough to be fatal. Even more impressive was the fact that he probably could tell me exactly how much more he would need to add in order for it to be fatal. So don't be telling me that fucking FPS.
We should move on to our subject about how video games don't translate to real life violence now.
Yeah, exactly. Bitches.
You're making railguns and it's... God damn it! We
exactly how to kill someone.
You know what's funny about that too is that's probably the one real time example of a guy who took a fucking video game and was like, "I like this video game so much, I'm gonna build a goddamn railgun." And when someone asks him, "Can that kill someone?" he goes, "Probably not. I'd need more magnets.
Hold on.
Let me know when CZM.
Here
we
go. Here's the article on ES Reality. Oh. Let's see. Maybe that wasn't it. Maybe not. I've got bamboozled, man. Yep. CZM built a railgun. But I can't find... There's a video out there where you can actually see him fire it and shit. The guy was amazing. So, anyway. God, still no DeMuslim. I feel like we gotta...
Yeah.
We gotta go out.
I think he's done for...
All right. I'm gonna move on as if. So, before we talk about the final Wings of Liberty GSL Code S beginning, do you want to talk about the topic that you were discussing earlier, Greg, about the toxic players versus or kind of like how it's handled right now by Riot and some other games, and then how Blizzard's handling it? And you've had some experiences recently, so anyway, drop it on us.
Yeah, the thing that brought it up in my mind, I was just streaming this morning, and there's a guy on the GM or on the HOTS GM ladder Yeah, I think he's actually in like 13th place now. And his ID is Chuck Norris, but spelled in like funny characters. And every single game, he's like 52-2 now, but he's a terrible player. He's like maybe low masters. And every single game he loses, he does that disconnect hack where the game hangs for a second, and then a little dialogue box says desync comes up with the option to just go to the score screen or go to options, and it shows up on the match list as a tie, and no one loses or gains any points from it. So he's been doing that. He's been reported for it for weeks. There was a thread on Team Liquid about it and whatnot. And apparently he's also DDoSed players before, but today he was doing that, and I beat him a few times. Then he DDoSed me. Our internet went down. We reset the routers, went back up, played him again, and the same thing happened again. And this is a guy who's just been, he's reported over and over and over. Like I said, there's threads on TL about him. Everyone knows he's a confirmed cheater. And he's sitting there destroying, like, not only people's gaming experience, but, like, when he does it, players like me and Ben, this is actually how we make a big portion of our money. This is our livelihood. Not being able to stream because of him, you know, directly very, very impactful to us. And Blizzard knows about this. There's no way they do not know about this. I sat there on my stream with thousands of viewers telling all of them how to go and report him. And this is on top of everything that else has happened in the past. But he's still just sitting there. Whereas, you know, you look over at Riot, they gave a professional player, like someone who was salaried by them, a one-year ban for being, I don't know exactly what happened, but I know he was just like offensive language and being an asshole and whatnot, over and over and over.
I don't think he was necessarily salaried by him, but he would have been. Well, right, he would have been, right? Like, I mean,
and there's a Mouse guy too.
I don't know if they technically.
People in the thread were saying he was salaried, so I think they were in the pro.
They're in season three, but like, I'm not sure necessarily they were paying him like the moment they got into season three. I think it like starts. I don't know, but either way, he would have been had he not been banned.
But, so yeah, like Riot is much more on top of things. And the other thing is they're very public about it. When they ban someone, they use him to set an example. Whereas even when they do a ban of hackers, they don't really make that much of a deal out of it. They don't say, look, this is what happens if you cheat or abuse our game. They just do it quietly.
And yeah, I mean, there's a couple competing thoughts here, and I definitely err towards what we're going to talk about, which is the Riot side. But Blizzard's always come out and said they ban in waves. I find that to be the most effective way. Let the people who are going to hack get the hack for a while, use it for a while, and then they're gone. So you grab more of the people as opposed to just the one or two people that kind of originate the hacks that'll always come back. The first few people that hack are the ones that will always hack, right? A lot of the people that they catch at the end of the wave, the couple hundred, those are the people that were like, well, I'll try this hack out. I'm getting tired of losing, or I want to see what all the hubbub's about. Then they get their $60 account frozen, and then they're like, oh, shit. That wasn't so great. So that's kind of their logic. But I'm with Greg on the sense that if I'm Blizzard and I'm a billion-dollar company, whatever, I can hire 5 people per game or just for Battle.net in general. I don't know. Maybe that's too far-reaching. But you hire 5 people and call them the fucking sheriffs for all I care. And what they do is they literally just look into cases. Or I've actually heard behind the scenes, too, they're going to do the tribunal thing in 2013, but I think they should be more active about it. Yeah, Blizzard, they've talked about wanting to change more to the Riot system where more actively people are getting caught. I guess it's not necessarily public just yet, but it's out there. Like, enough people know about it. I don't feel like I'm...
Here we go again!
Like, it's not an announcement or any shit like that, but it's been talked about publicly. But I have to agree with Greg. Like, when there's people that literally just make a mockery of it, get to the top of the ladder, and then publicize being a dick to a lot of people in their game, there should be somebody somewhere that could take 5 seconds to log in and just like boop, delete them. But like, I want to take it a step further. I'd like it if they took that account and they did really creative things with it and then advertised, like Greg was talking about. Like, imagine if you got caught hacking, and what they did was they rigged your like account to where every time you queue up a game, you play against the computer just every fucking time, no matter what you do. So you'd like not know what's going on. I think that'd be great.
Or they make a sub-segment of hackers and they can only play each other when they queue up. Something like that'd be funny. Another problem I have with it is kind of the inconsistency of it. Like, we have these people who are genuinely, like, just hurting the experience for everyone else, and nothing happens to them for weeks and weeks and weeks. And one time, as many people may know, I made a facetious comment about David Kim and Tire Irons, and I was 2 or 3 or 4 day banned, like, within a day or two of it happening. I don't know. If they can go on and click on my account, like Jeff said, and ban me for a couple of days for something like that, which obviously very inappropriate. I should not have said that. I do not believe that David Kim needs that to happen to him. But if they can go on and do that for that reason, and they can't go on and ban this dude for fucking up all our games and all our streams over and over and over, you know, for weeks on end, they can't go in and do that. I don't know. That seems pretty wrong to me.
I mean, it honestly, in this day and age of technology, okay, I can watch Hulu on my iPad while taking a shit, okay? There's no way you can't tell me that you can't just click a button and ban someone in the grand scheme of the wizard or the Blizzard brain that exists there in Irvine. You know, like, there's no way at all. And so I do wish that there was, you know, more active, because obviously that's an issue. Like, you know, you can't play, you can't stream. It obviously interrupts other people trying to train up. It devalues the ladder overall, just for people to see that. It's demotivating. Yeah. So I again, it kind of comes down to, gosh, that seems like it'd be a pretty great position.
And on the flip side too, so Riot, if people aren't privy to this, they basically, looks like the Muslims back on line. They took some really popular people that would have qualified for season 3 League of Legends, which is a salaried year long tournament, huge publicity. It's a very big deal. And they took these people that had literally done so much wrong that they have been reported. One guy was reported something like 430 times in 135 games. Holy shit. but they took that guy and they publicly said, you know, this account's banned forever. He's banned from the tournament for 1 year. Don't do this. Here's what he did. And the public part, the ostracization, that was really good. The idea that they're holding their game up to a higher standard in terms of professionalism, that's awesome. Now, in Riot's defense, part of the reason they do that, too, is because it's a team game. So when that guy's a dickhead, a lot of times he's hurting the experience of as many as 9 other people. So there's much more of a need for that. Whereas if you're playing a dickhead on the ladder, there's a good chance that they're only really affecting you or whoever else they're playing in a 2v2 or whatever. It's just, bottom line, less people. But that doesn't deter from the point. Don't think I'm arguing for it. Like, Greg's point that this guy is shutting down Greg's stream that had, you know, 5,000-6,000 people on it, that's a big deal. That's really bad. Or if Destiny makes his income from streaming and a guy's just trolling him like a Deezer who just literally plays him all day long and cheats and hurts his viewership and gets him to turn his screen off, that kind of stuff, because we dealt with that as well, then that's really bad. And again, people will make the argument Blizzard doesn't need to police on behalf of streaming. No, they don't. But if they have control within their game to get the dickheads out of it, I don't know of anyone that's going to argue that's how they want to play the game. That's that they paid their hard-earned dollars to do that. No, you actually have to agree when you buy the game. That thing you click OK instead of reading 5 pages of, it talks about conduct. It talks about how they can do anything they want to you basically within the game. And Blizzard made it that way on purpose because they do that with all their games. They rule with an iron fist, usually.
I really like the fact that Riot's willing to be more subjective about it. Like, Blizzard has come out and explicitly said, we will not punish stream cheaters. It is outside our realm. We can't find anything that actually says that that's illegal. That's on you if you want to stream. Whereas I saw one thread on Reddit which said League or Riot banned Saint Vicious. He's like a famous pro, I'm pretty sure, right?
Yes.
They banned him for 4 days for trolling within a game. Like, someone else wanted to be jungle, and then he picked that too and just followed them around or whatever. And then Riot immediately disconnected him and banned him for 4 days just for something like that. Like, if you can do that, you can take care of stream cheaters. And, I mean, that's going to piss off some people. And I don't know. I think it's just well worth it for a company to be actually that involved and that to care that much about making sure that the gaming experience is fun for everyone. And I say this with full knowledge that I might get in trouble for the way I act, you know, Riot in control of my game. Like, I would probably have to moderate myself a little bit more if we were under them. But Blizzard doesn't give a fuck, so I guess I might as well.
In Greg's defense, since the Tire Iron incident,
I have not said anything more about Tire Irons.
No more Tire Irons. David Kim's anatomy is safe from Greg's verbal...
I have learned my lesson.
Recommendations. Yes.
Well, then... You know, look at all the good that could be done.
Can I also say this?
What?
If you haven't yet, read the article, not the article, but the threads on the guys that got banned in League of Legends, because if you have a certain mindset when you read it, it's fucking hilarious the way they say it, because they'll be like, this guy actually got 435 complaints in 135 games, which puts him in the 0.06 percentile of our entire player base. So at first you're like, what's the big deal with that? But then you think, it's something like 30 fucking million people play that game, and you're one of the 0.06% dickheads in that game. Of 30 million people, you're one of the biggest dicks of that chunk of people.
Congratulations.
That's fucking science. That's like, that's how bad you are. And I'd like that news to hit that kid, and he'd be like, oh, shit.
I'm a dick.
Shit, I'm kind of bad. And, like, let the gravity of that sit with you, because holy
unfortunately,
crap.
In the real world, it'd be like, number one, number one, I'm better than number one. I'm going to be worse next time, you know, unfortunately. I know you kind of joined the conversation a little late, DeMuslim. Thanks. But no,
sorry.
Seriously, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on the concept of should Blizzard do a little bit more heavy banning when it comes to these types of individuals? And I like that, Greg, I like the fact that you pointed out that, like, hey, we can't help you with stream cheaters. Fair enough. But guys who are obviously like, you know, you
well,
had mentioned
desyncing. I think they should. I think if there's sufficient proof, because, like, it's very obvious that Deezer does. He admits it. There's people who have streamed themselves hacking. I think they should take care of that. I think that is within the realm.
I think the I personally feel like who is that individual who's, like, policing at that point?
Well, who's the guy who decided over at Riot that the guy running around with a character deserves a 4-day ban?
Well, they have the tribunal, and I think they have other people as well.
Yeah, they got tribunal. So if you're level 30, you can log in and weigh in on it. And then they have like a top, like the inner circle where they wear fucking red robes and they sit around a campfire. And those people are like voted in by, I don't know, it's a pretty good system. But I just got to say, like, there's this concept amongst gamers globally. And you're about to hear my argument on behalf of dictatorship. So get ready for this.
Uh-oh.
The idea, like, this happened all the time. In Brood War, we'd have hackers, we'd have cheaters. No, it wasn't. Yeah, it was. Okay, so it'd be like a tournament like WCG, and there'd be an obvious hacker playing in WCG, and we'd go to WCG and we'd say, we all know this guy hacks. And WCG, who doesn't understand gaming at the time, well, they never really did, they'd be like, well, what proof do you have? And we'd say, well, here's the proof. And they'd go, do you have more proof? Do you have the person phone calling someone and then recording themselves saying they hack? We'd be like, no, that's unrealistic. That's, you know, you can't do that. And they'd be like, well, in the world of fairness, we couldn't actually do anything. And I say, fuck that, man. I say, no. I say you create a sheriff character like I talked about, but we name him something controversial like Abdullah Jesus Christ Spaghetti Monster. And here's the thing. They walk around the internets, the gaming world, and they just use fucking logic. So if there's some guy who's just being a dick, I don't care if it's stream cheating, I don't care if he, like, is email harassing people, and he logs in and goes, well, that guy's a douchebag. And someone's like, but what proof do you have, Abdullah Jesus Christ Spaghetti Monster? And he goes, I don't need goddamn proof. He's just a fucking douchebag. Boom, and he's banned. Like, this idea of, like, absolute proof on the internet gaming world, there's going to be one mistake in 100 years. There's going to be one guy who's actually framed by Anonymous. Everybody else will be completely justifiably banned. We need to get rid of this idea that, like, you have to have absolute proof. Like, if there's a guy that's clearly being a douchebag, just get rid of him.
You're banned from life, son.
Judge Dredd. Yeah.
If only life was like Twitch chat, you could just time someone out from existence for 10 minutes, make them think about what they've done. DeMuslim, your thoughts? You got desynced and all that shit. You've messed around with some of these guys. You've scrapped with them. You don't like them?
Well, no, not at all. I mean, I stream a lot, and there was a period of time where, like, I had to stream. Like, that was my job kind of thing. That was my main role that I had to do for a few months, and I was running into these guys that were desyncing me. Like, it wasn't just stream cheating or whatever, or using a map pack. It was just straight up, bam, desync, so I'm dropped from the game, which I'm still technically streaming, but then it got to a point where I was playing the same guy, and I just decided, you know, I'm going to move over to Wings of Liberty because I was playing on HOTS. And the guy messaged me and just said, don't worry, I'll get you there too. Then the internet in the house would just go out. And I mean, I'm pretty sure that that's massively illegal.
But you could have actually doctored that text to say that, DeMuslim. Like,
that was also the same guy I was talking about from this morning, by the way.
And yeah, the same guy was disconnecting me for a good like week or two straight with every game that I played and logged on. Like, he added me to his friends and stuff, and I have no control over who's on his friends list, so he can see when I'm online or in a game, and he'd be constantly disconnecting me, which not only just limited my practice, but limited my streaming hours and such, and eventually I got to the point where I just had to, like, switch my internet line in the house, and, I mean, if he found out whatever, the IP address of that one, then the other half of the house goes out and such, and this is all our livelihood, and while I don't singly rely on income from streaming and such, like, if I did, I'd be in real shit streak, and this guy has an obvious problem, and I have no idea what it is.
That
some people just want to see the world burn, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Abdullah, Jesus Christ, Spaghetti Monster. He would. He'd already hear your plea. You know, like when HOTS first came out and people found out that you could do clan invites to people just over and over again.
Oh my god, dude.
And it took fucking Blizzard a week to like actually do something about that.
And people want to know why we come on this show and we're all angry and shit. They're all like, God, why are they so mad they've got this pent-up anger? It's like, you fucking deal with that shit. How would you like it if every time I'm going to open up Chrome and browse Reddit, I'm going to go Reddit. Why isn't it loading? What the fuck? Like, yeah. Except you're streaming. You're trying to, you know, do other shit and not browse Reddit. It sucks. And why do you have so much pent up anger, you guys? I just don't understand. Any final thoughts on this topic?
Just that I commend Riot for doing that. And like I said, I think what I've heard is that Blizzard is hearing that people, that more policing is needed. Their games are, you know, being played by more people these days. I guess that's not a fair comparison. I think World of Warcraft probably had more, but anyways, they're moving in that direction. I think that's a good thing, and a tip of the hat to Riot, because I think they're doing it right with that. I think they're doing a good job. Mm-hmm. Although, I did make this point, real quick, sorry to drag this out again, but I think it's a kind of funny point. I did have the realization that while I liked that they were being public about it, and I liked that they were punishing him, and I liked they had a tribunal, I then thought to myself, this guy had almost 500 fucking warnings. They're not acting that fast.
Yeah.
They're not acting that fast. I think they should have a 150 warning rule where it's like, if you're being such a douchebag that you're getting 150 warnings in 135 games, you might want to take a closer look.
I don't know how severe the warnings are, because apparently he went through the tribunal thing 8 times. Or 9 times and was punished 8 times before the one that actually got him permabanned. So
I think
they kind of just built
my point, though, right?
They gave him quite a few opportunities to fix his shit.
They're like, yeah.
They really
I don't
did.
Know. His name was like Varian or something. They're like, please bring forward Varian. You stand before us the 7th time this month, sir. We will
in
once
a
again
virtual
find
environment.
You guilty. 24 hours without League of Legends, and he's like, no! And then
evaporates,
he's like, fuck you, you're cool, fuck you, I'm out.
A Tron desync and everything. Be so good. That's why when these games go virtual, and like these guys can't live without it, then they're going to go through withdrawal symptoms when they get banned for not being able to go in their virtual game and fucking punch people in the face for no reason at all. Let's keep going. We got 2 more things we want to talk about, and we're going to talk about video game violence here in a moment. But the final Wings of Liberty GSL Code S season begins. Did you guys watch it?
No.
Damn it, neither did I. I feel really shitty because I haven't watched it yet. Well, guess what? I thought that maybe you didn't watch it, so what we're going to do is we're going to celebrate the final Wings of Liberty GSL Code S season with a fucking pop quiz. And I've got some questions, and you are going to try to come up with cumulative answer together, as in, Wheat, our final answer is this. And then we'll see how many points that you actually get. Are you up for the challenge?
Do you think?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Are you ready? All right. Here it is. Question number one. We're starting with an easy one. Who was the first GSL winner?
Fruit dealer, was it?
Fruit dealer, yeah.
Okay.
Final answer,
fruit dealer. That's correct. But bonus, who did he face?
Into the Rainbow, whatever ID he was using.
Okay.
Is that your final answer?
Hope Torture.
Yeah, yeah, that's what he used.
Hope torture. God damn. Torture.
Dude, God, you got, it was like kind of a trick question, but you're right. Like, good call. Okay. So that was worth like 3 points. Good job, guys. All right. What race has won the most GSLs?
Taren. Final answer.
Final answer, Taren.
Obviously.
The answer is Taren tied with Zerg.
Still correct.
I'm going to give you half the points. I'm going to give you half the points now. All right. All right. All right. How many of the Taren wins were TVT?
Six. Five. Five.
Yeah. Wait, are you just... You just...
I don't actually know. I'd guess it's around five or six, but meh.
Five or six. The answer is four. So yeah. Over half of them, Taren could only beat themselves. I will just give you guys 2 points because technically you didn't know that Zerg and Taren had tied, and I'm a little disappointed. How many GSL events have there been, including this one? And we're talking about Code S or championships. They were not trying to trick you into like knowing how many Code A events there were in conjunction with Code S. So how many GSL events have there been, including this one?
Well, there's that world championship, or did they have two of those?
They've had two world championships. I think Polt won the first one.
Yeah.
And I don't know about the second one.
Oh.
MMA won something, right? Was that a GSL?
That was a special event against DRG. I remember the event, but it wasn't a world championship.
By the way, just for the record, all info's from Liquipedia, and Hero didn't play his brother in Brood War, so take it for what it's worth.
Huh?
Go ahead.
We have no idea with this one.
No.
You don't even want to, like, take a guess?
No.
20?
Okay.
I guess 19.
Okay. What's your final answer?
We can do 19. 19
and a half. 19 and a half. I'm really impressed, you guys. It's 18. So, 17 seasons have been played, 18 with this one currently coming up. Of these 18 events, how many finals were mere matches?
Well, there was the 4 TBTs, then there was Lassir and ST. There was a PvP, MC Seed. So that's 6. Were there any others?
Did you already say Lassir and ST?
Did Polt play a Taren for his world championship? I thought he did.
Probably. That was during, like, Super Taren. So, 7?
Seven.
We'll say seven.
Final answer. I'm really impressed, you guys. It's 8. Fine. And since you were one point off on the other one, and you were 1 point off on this one, I'll just give you guys another 2 points.
Oh, Jan Sniper.
Wow. Totally forgot about the most recent one.
I think everyone did.
No one cared about that.
All right. Going into the tougher questions. How many seasons did Kelly Milkey's cast GSL?
How many seasons?
It was just one.
I think it was two. I feel like it was longer than one.
I remember seeing a lot of hate for a long time.
Those were the good old days, weren't they?
They were amazing.
I remember us all getting on, getting in trouble for those conversations. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Remember back in the old days when the biggest leagues in the world would hire casters that probably shouldn't have that position and had a tough time speaking.
I lived with Rotterdam at the time, and she did an interview where she talked about, like, she doesn't know why people hate her. Like, is it just because she has an accent? And she's like, compared herself to Rotterdam, and she's like, people don't hate him and he has an accent, but it wasn't really because he had an accent or she had an accent. It's just because I couldn't really understand a lot of what she said, I guess. Like, it was kind of a funny situation, but I remember Kevin getting like, what the fuck kind of situation.
Yeah. Final answer?
Two seasons.
Two.
All right. I don't actually know the answer, so I'm going to give you negative 5 points for even knowing that. All right.
Damn those trick questions.
Yeah. How many seasons/events were sponsored by Monsieur J?
Oh.
That was only one, wasn't it? Maybe two?
I want to say two.
I don't know. That made a pretty big impression. I don't remember people talking about it for a long time.
What was their saying that was so weird?
I don't know. It's Korean.
I hate myself or something like that. I hate you. I think it was I hate you.
That might just be someone saying, oh, no.
Yeah. No, it's I hate you. Yeah, it was really weird.
I hate you. What's your J? How many seasons? Final answer?
I think one.
Idra, you're a smart man.
Oh,
you're
damn.
Right. 100 points. That was totally awesome. All right. How many seasons events were sponsored by Hot Six, the energy drink?
There's been quite a few of those. I'd say at least 4 or 5.
Let's say 4. Ben?
Yeah, let's go for 4. I kind of remember Domrigu downing one a long time ago.
Final answer?
Sure.
4?
4.
You guys should listen to Idra, man. He's been spot on. It was 5.
Damn.
It was 5.
Isn't the current one is 5, so like we just, that's the 5th one, so we just didn't count that, you know.
Can I say this? Being as how we are sponsored by Monster, not knowing the number is actually a better science.
Good point. Good point.
A thousand
points for that answer, Jeff.
Thank
Congratulations.
You. Thank you.
All right. Winners of all 17 seasons scored 68 wins in the final games, because obviously best of 7, 4 games won. How many total losses did the GSL losers rack up in 17 seasons? So how many total games lost?
How many total wins?
I'm sorry, one.
Wait, what?
So if it's 68 wins,
it should have been. I wrote this wrong. How many total wins did the GSL?
42, 45,
455.
Ah, fuck it.
God, and right there in 11:56, had all of Greg explained. Hard work, hard work, hard work. Fuck it.
Oh.
It's 11:56.
So how many total wins did they rack up? You don't want to take a stab?
11:56.
Out of wait, how many?
1,156.
Wait. I'm sorry. Maybe I didn't make it. In final games only.
And
best of sevens. 68 wins came from all the winners because they had to win 4 something.
Oh, so you're talking about map wins.
Yes, map wins.
Okay.
Oh, well, so how many maps were...
Oh, Jesus Christ. That's what you were doing in your head, Greg. Oh, my God. My brain just exploded a little bit. Yes, just map wins. How many wins? I wrote it wrong. I totally fucked this question.
I'm going to guess something like 17 or 20.
Sure.
Takuma, what do you guys...
I can't remember like that many close games.
It's reasonably low. There's been like 2 or 3, 4 threes max.
There is entirely too much math going on inside the game right now. We need to...
All right.
I don't know if this really counts as math.
Final answer?
I think you're
answer?
Putting off the violence talk because you know...
Let's do this. I've only got like 2 questions left. Final answer?
20.
20. 19. 24 out of 68 possibles. And so of all those, how many 4-0s have happened of the 17 events?
There was Nesty Inca...
That was a terrible series.
Yeah. Wasn't Marine King evolved in a 4-0?
There was a couple of PvPs that were 4-0s.
Lazera Nesty was a 4-0 too.
Yeah. So that's 2. And MVP 4-0'd MKP, I think. So that's 3.
Did Top get 4-0'd as well?
I hope so. He deserved
it. Let's go with 4, right? We know of 3. Let's go with 4.
Okay. 4.
Dude. Congratulations. Using that brain power. That is right. 100 points for each 4-0.
I wonder who the 4th was. What were they all?
I don't even know
seed
if I still have
seed
it up.
4-0'd MC.
I don't have it up anymore. I closed that shit. All right. Last 2. How many seasons did people struggle with the live GOM player at some ungodly time in the morning to watch the GSL finals?
18.
Good. Oh, my God.
That's, I mean, technically 17 because it hasn't happened yet, but as we can predict the future.
Last night.
Guys. Someone made a picture of
what?
Of Dula Jesus Christ spaghetti.
Wait, I gotta see it, dude. Where is it?
I put it in the chat.
Yeah.
I can't click on that one.
What is this?
You have to send it to my other chat.
All right. I tweeted
send it.
To,
you did? There. Okay. Awesome. Let me look at this.
Whoever did that, you're the best.
It's so simple yet effective. You know? As there we go. I like it. Fucking monster. That's pretty good. Back to what's really important, this quiz. Yes, Idri, you're correct. Trick question every season. So congratulations. 895 points. And here is the super bonus. What is the average length of every GSL winner's name? So what is the number of characters in their name to a tenth decimal point? And I will give you 100 million points if you can be plus minus 0.3.
I'm going to say 5.45 repeating.
Do you count MKP as three letters or his whole name?
Well, you'd probably have to ask yourself if MKP...
He's always played under MKP, I thought, right?
Yes. No,
DRG, and DRG. My calculations include DRG being DRG and not Dongrengu.
Well, that shortens it quite a bit, so I think that drops it down to just 5.4.
4.5, like Greg said.
5.4? Demuzzle, what do you think?
I'll go 5.4.
Okay. I mean, really? With like MCs and MVP and MC and MVP and MMA?
Tell us the answer.
It's 4.4. And you lost. You were a
That's close, man. I'm actually
You were a whole one character off. That's bullshit. I haven't cool. 4.4. All right. Congratulations. I don't know how many points you guys scored, but I felt like you did a good job. Let's talk about video game violence. I think it's bullshit. I think I'm getting to say all the stuff I want to say on the radio, but I can't use like fuck, damn, shit, cunt, bitch, you know, all that stuff. So you guys know that they want to put a 1% sales tax on video games that are T or M rated.
I heard that. I heard they're trying to go the way of cigarettes now, I guess. Or
how many people have quit smoking because cigarette taxes have gone up?
Only the ones who literally can't afford it.
Versus all the ones that have been like, shit, another tax. This sucks.
Yep.
Oh, well.
Well, it got to the point where I've never actually purchased a pack of cigarettes, but aren't like cigarettes actually like $3, but you pay $10 after the tax or something like that?
It's pretty crazy.
It's pretty ridiculous, yeah.
So if they did that with games, where like games right now are $50 or $60, but in the future they're like $200 after taxes... I bet a whole shitload of people will stop playing games.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, it's not an addiction. It's just something people do for fun. They're going to let go of it way easier.
But if they do those kind of taxes, I'm going to get really violent.
Are you?
Then they'll
make you go crazy.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah.
All right.
No, we just need to start a petition saying everyone's going to, like, never mind. I probably shouldn't say stuff like that. That'd be a bad idea.
General philosophy. Behind this is that, you know, because of recent events, current events, the media needs something else to point fingers at, something else to blame. And video games have always been in the limelight, but there's no doubt about it that over the course of the past few years, specifically modern combat and hyper-violent games have come into the limelight, especially, you know, first-person shooters in that regard. I really don't think that anyone... besides those idiots like 3 months ago, are looking at StarCraft and going, this is pretty violent, guys. It's gonna
Here's the problem I have. And this, in my opinion, this will be a funny conversation because I can't imagine with us on our video game podcast and then our audience of video game players, anyone disagreeing with the idea that it's mostly ridiculous to associate guns and video games. But that being said, I take a game like Grand Theft Auto, which I've played, enjoyed, and like, but I see a situation where you can, like, have sex with a prostitute, pay her money, run her over, collect the money, buy an AK-47, and then shoot up a city. I look at that situation and I say, okay, that's a little bit over the top. So my answer to that would be to treat that like you would any other media where you have more things put in place where a young kid can't walk up and buy that game. And now here's the next thing. If an adult wants to walk up with that kid and buy that game for that kid, then it's bad parenting by a lot of our standards. So why does the government have to think it needs to take it a step further and be like, well, parents these days don't know what's good for their own children, so we're going to pass laws? Because clearly what we've seen with school shooting, which is funny because there's actually charts to talk about with more video games being sold, there's actually less violence. That's actually a statistic that's being circulated. But they want to scapegoat with this. So they're saying, well, we need to do something about those violent video games. So they're actually kind of going after developers. They're talking about a 1% tax, which, by the way, is ridiculous. Is there anyone out there that's like, I'll take this video game? And they're like, all right, $60 after tax, $60. and, you know, like, 6 cents. And then they're like, it's how much money? This is preposterous. I will not play this game. Instead, I'll go home and eat celery and jog until soccer practice tomorrow. Like, nobody actually fucking does that. So the answers, the scapegoat, the attention they're giving it, it's misplaced and it's terrible. And in my opinion, the worst side effect of this is it illustrates how horribly misplaced and how out of the loop a lot of our politicians and the people that talk about the news and that kind of stuff are to even like focus this hard about it when the actual reaction or the actual reasons why this kind of stuff is happening is for the most part being not discussed. I mean, at least the attention for it's being stolen by this.
I mean, I think you bring it up and you open up with the most important part is that we can sit here and circle jerk all day and be like, yeah, fuck those idiots that say it. But honestly, like that is where I would like the conversation to go is kind of what you're talking about is that it seems to me that it's not so much, it's just it's an issue of education, right? And, you know, my parents, they didn't really grow up, they grew up with pinball, you know? And that's it, right? So they raised me who then I was growing up on the Commodore 64 and the Nintendo and the Super Nintendo and then getting, you know, on BBSs and stuff. And they never dealt with that shit. They didn't really know how to, you know, police it properly. I grew up as a gamer, so I feel like I have a really good understanding on how to, you know, on how to police my son on what he can and can't play. But I certainly understand that there's parents out there that just have no fucking clue. And I know that little Billy's like, Mom, I want a glass of chocolate milk and also buy me the latest Call of Duty, thanks. And she's like, okay. You know, well, here you go.
That's their responsibility. That's their responsibility as parents, though. Like,
yeah.
You're supposed to look into what you do for your kid, especially if it's something that, like, it's obviously questionable if there's this much attention going into it. Like, I don't think we have to hamstring everyone just because people are bad parents.
But
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I realize that we can actually just solve this. I watch a lot of the news, so I know the mega argument. Now, follow me through this path of logic. At the beginning of you know, the 19th century, we had a couple of world wars. Nobody was playing video games. Okay, since then, the Atari came out. We had a Cold War. We had a Cold War and a couple of desert conflicts.
Good job.
That's it, Wheat. That's Hitler it. Did not play video games.
And historically, I mean, you're right, first, but historically, it's always been something. Heavy metal.
Yeah, that's the funniest part. If you look through hippies. If you look through the list of the NRA's excuses when this, because they get addressed every time something like this happens, and every single time it's something. And video games are just the current hot topic that they can place blame on.
And won't we just perpetually always have this issue? I mean, I could tell you something right now. I watch some movies that shit on some of the stuff that I play in video games. Like, I don't care what you – like, dude,
yeah.
I mean, I love horror movies. I love twisted, crazy shit. I just don't understand why someone couldn't be like, that's a little crazy. You know, we're breeding serial killers over here and all sorts of twisted and crazy – but – it is still kind of it's an issue, and I feel like these things start coming up, and we have you know, we have more and more attention drawn to them. But I don't, the Muslim, you've been a little quiet over there, and you offer a little different perspective because UK has a different rating system. Also, there's, you know, some European rules that kind of travel from country to country as well. But what are your thoughts on all this?
Well, I was like playing video games before I could walk, kind of thing. I was very late to walking, and had a Sega Genesis and stuff. And I'm one of the least violent people I know, so just talking about that. And yeah, I grew up loving video games. I played a lot of sport and stuff. And, you know, I've been to countless gaming events since I was 15. I can't even remember there being a fight at any one of them amongst lots of gamers only. And Europe itself, I think we're a lot more chill than the US when it comes to video games causing violence and what have you. I don't know if that's kind of a religious look on things.
Well, you have to, because you have cameras on every street corner.
Yeah, we do. We're pretty safe. But I don't really know how to talk about it. I just find it pretty absurd.
Do you think that games like Call of Duty and stuff have an adverse effect on kids if not monitored properly?
I mean, if you have a six-year-old child that's sat in his room all day killing people with a gun, and you don't tell your kid, like, hey, you know, you don't really do that, I think it's a lot about responsibility. And if a parent has their kid that wants to play a video game, you look into it and see what it's about. And, you know, there's age limits on games for a reason. Like, I'm not saying I always obeyed them, but my parents would look into Warcraft 3. It was 15 plus or something at the time, and it didn't really matter. I knew what was happening. I knew this was just, like, pretend or just in the game. I knew I'm not going to run around like a bit and dress up as a big green orc and, like, axe somebody in the head, you know? And it's going to take me 20 minutes to kill this person with an axe. I just think it's all relative. If you're an adult and you have a kid, you tell them, like, hey, and you have to make sure that they're not, you know, kind of messed up in the first place. And that's one of the things. If people are driven to commit acts of violence and stuff,
people know how to tune into the show. And if you don't, well, I'm not really going to advertise it that well, except say the phone number, which is 909-581-8519. Which I'm going to put in the chat. 8519. There we go. But we'll open it up. We don't want to talk about MLG no open bracket. Maybe talk a little bit about GSL, whatever.
Anything
at all.
What if Slasher called in to bust a story?
I don't know.
That'd be awesome.
He might be a little scared of you, man.
No. I try to be so nice. I said so many nice things.
What do you mean?
To Slasher.
Oh.
I think we're moving in the right direction in terms of having intellectual debates on the show without it turning into a piss fest.
One day it will.
My evidence? 1 week later, we have zero drama so far. Zero.
Oh, it's only a matter of time. Let's take our first call. We've got area code 408 on the horn. What is up? Welcome to Inside the Game. Hello.
Hi, I would like to ask about the accessibility of pro gamers. So in traditional sports, we have a distancing between players, managers, GMs, blah, 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 blah. You guys know what I'm talking about. But when we're talking about a player like Idra or a control, we have a connection between the stream. So we have this, like, oh, I know Idra hates this shit, and I hate this shit as well. I feel a connection there. But players won't get the access through interviews and so on. So what I'm trying to ask is this connection something we should foster as a community, or should we distance ourselves? Because the connection can also cause drama and, like crazy shit on Reddit and just stuff that just festers. Or should we just, like bring up the community with this connection?
Good question.
Go ahead, Weed.
Yeah, no, Jeff, go.
Well, I was just going to say, I think even within our own community, you're kind of seeing the natural progression of things. Like, when football players started out 100, whatever it was, I don't actually know when football first started, for American football, 100 years ago, whatever, they weren't big superstars. And obviously, this is a terrible analogy, so I'm just going to use the analogy I was going to use. Our own community. You look at guys like myself and Idra, yeah, you can tweet us, yeah, you can talk to us, and that makes, you know, a lot of sense right now, because he has, like, you know, almost 60,000 Twitter followers. He doesn't have the 1 million your superstars do. But then even if you go to the in my opinion, the very tippy top of our community, like Day9 has actually kind of ascended to a level where you really can't talk to him for the most part. Like, you'll tweet at him, and it's either him who reads it or somebody else. You'll email him, someone he pays answers that. When he shows up to an event, he's only signing autographs when he has designated time. And of course, that's a lot. I'm not talking criticism about him at all. But what I am saying is that he reaches so many people, and he's such a big star that it already is to a point where we're starting to see that insulation to a certain extent. And that's the way of things. As people become more and more stretched out because they're seeing more and more people, they need to take steps further back to not talk to as many people. But right now, when our community is as small as it is, but on its way up, it makes sense that your stars are connected to the people so that they can foster that excitement and grow the brands and create an atmosphere where they're in a position where they they can afford to not talk to people, actually.
Yeah, I think it's on the players because it is a good thing if you can sustain that connection. Like you said, it lets our fans be closer to us. It lets them see sides of our personality that they can then relate to, and it makes them more passionate fans. I think that's clear in both me and Jeff. Like, we're both very, like, very connected to the community. You hear a lot about how we feel about things and what we think of things, and we have some of the most passionate fans and also passionate haters because, you know, it goes both ways. But that's a good thing. It gets people excited about stuff, and it makes them care more. That's really good, but it also stresses us out. Like, Jeff has talked in the past about how he has to interact way less with the community. He can't read Reddit as much. He can't post on Team Liquid as much. And me, too, to an extent. I don't post on Team Liquid nearly as much as I did in Brood War just because, you know, that's stressful. There's a lot of idiots out there. There are a lot of haters. And if you interact with them enough, it's just a waste of time, but it's also stressful for you. So you have to pull back from that. And so I think it's up to every player to decide how much they can deal with, how much it's worth it to them to put up with that in order to be more connected with the community, because it is definitely a plus. It's just there's also, you know, there's a cost to it.
Any thoughts on that, DeMuslim?
It's the natural progression of things. Streams right now, they have like a handleable amount of people. It's a handleable amount of pressure, but let's say some big football stars, and by that I mean soccer stars, were kind of streaming everything they did and like talking about what they did. Like, they'd be popular and stuff. With what we do, it's very easy to stream and have that connection with people because it's just what we do. And like, you're connected to a PC, it's not much extra work or what have you. But the amount of hate that would come with that for these people, let's say on average, like 5% of the people that watch you don't like you. And say if you've got millions of people watching you, like that's a lot of people sending you a lot of hate. And as things get bigger and things get kind of more scary with that, people are going to have to slow things down on our end. But for now, trying to grow things, trying to have like connections with people. Because eventually, if you feel for a sport and enough people around you feel for a sport, you feel connected because of that. I know like families grow up supporting sports teams or what have you. And a lot of it is because you're in a group together, whereas like the StarCraft or supporting a game right now, it's still a very small thing. Like, you can be a college kid going to school and you go home on your PC and it's like, oh, this guy's streaming and I really like him and he's a cool dude. Whereas, say if it gets to a point where multiple people in this college dorm like a certain team or certain players and you can kind of have big back and forth chant, like banters with lots and lots of people, I can see it getting cooler, and then we won't necessarily need to be there to kind of like give everything that we have. It'll just be, they'll be attracted to other things, not just like the players and stuff, you know.
Thank you very much. Oh, you had a final comment?
Yeah, thank you. I just want to say that I am a big fan of all of you. I watched you like for a long time, and I hope you guys keep doing this because it inspires me to do a lot of things with my life as well.
Thank you very much. Have a good night. You know, the one thing I just want to throw out there, I can't really say anything better than what you guys said, but think about any sort of traditional media that's ever had that level of accessibility, and I don't think you can find one. Like, it's just almost abnormal how much access people have to the, you know, that top tier and StarCraft 2, or honestly, like a lot of the esports, you know, Dota, LOL, even Shoot Mania, and the guys that are starting to get back in there from the other FPS games. Like, it's really crazy. But anyway, let's take another phone call, a couple more. Maybe we'll even get the infamous Goatlust to get in. It would be appropriate, Goatlust, right now that you maybe start making your way to Skype. But we're going to take another one. Area code 443, hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hi, I have a question Adriel.
Okay.
Adriel, do you think that if instead of StarCraft 2, if Warcraft 4 came out instead, do you think it had the same popularity as StarCraft 2?
It depends on the game. Warcraft 3 was a lot bigger than Brood War everywhere except for Korea, and Korea doesn't really seem to be picking up StarCraft 2 as well as we could hope, so it's possible. And then you would get China on board, which is gigantic, but then China's kind of weird when you're dealing with sponsors because of other stuff. So I don't know. If it were a good game, then there's a lot of support behind it already. If it were to come out now, would it replace StarCraft 2? I don't know. Probably not. But if it were to come out instead, could it be bigger than StarCraft 2 was? I think that's definitely a possibility. But a lot of it comes down to just how good the game would be.
The Muslim, would you jump ship? Be like, yes!
You know, like, this conversation went down when StarCraft 2 was coming out and Warcraft 3 was still going, right? I mean, China was huge in Warcraft 3. Sky had 2.2 million Chinese Twitter followers and stuff. And when you think about the biggest guy in StarCraft 2 right now currently is Day9. He's got something around 140,000, 150,000.
160,
sir. 160. Like, it's still a massive amount. But when you think of, like, China, like, they're just huge. And, I mean, if they take on a game, are they necessarily going to make it rise just because they have it? I don't know. But they definitely have a huge player base, probably a bigger player base than StarCraft 2. But would it be one that's as accessible for, like, tournaments and things like that? I don't know. Would I jump ship? I'm really happy with StarCraft 2 right now, and that's something to think about, I guess.
Well, I was just joking.
I've got a piece of advice. I'm going to give this for free. Usually, you know, if when it comes to business, I charge for my consulting. But Blizzard, I know you're listening, and more importantly, the Chinese government. I have an idea. Blizzard sells the rights to Warcraft to the Chinese government. The Chinese government makes Warcraft 3. And then implements within the game itself subtle suggestions for proper conduct, what to purchase, how to act when you're a Chinese citizen. Make millions. Make millions and control your population. I don't actually see how there's a loser here. And Blizzard makes a big fat paycheck from selling the right to China, and China's got the capital to do that.
There we go. Caller, thank you very much. We appreciate your call. You can reach it 909-581-8519. Take another one. We've got area code 708. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Yeah, what's up, guys?
What's up?
I just wanted to talk a little bit about the open bracket elimination.
Sure.
Like, I'm an up and comer, I guess you could say. Like, I was planning on going to this tournament. Like, I don't know, I've been playing Hard Swarm beta a lot, you know, on the ladder. And now it's, like, gone. So, like, I could basically say I'm glad I didn't buy a ticket yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just, like, I feel like MLG is kind of dropping the ball, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the sentiment across the board. Of course, with the details that we've got now, have you competed in MLG Open before?
No, I haven't. Like, I was basically... Like, I don't know, I enjoy StarCraft, but, like, now I'm starting to, you know, take it a little more serious with Heart of the Swarm coming out, and I thought this would be, like, you know, good opportunity.
So, this event doesn't have Heart of the Swarm, but then the next one does, do you feel like that'll just prepare you for the next one, or are you kind of deflated?
You mean the open bracket?
Yeah, let's say, like, their second event.
I'm still going to play, like, by all means, I really like the game, you know, like, but it's just kind of, I don't know, like, silly, like... Hard for me to put in words.
Yeah, I saw a lot of people kind of tweeting and be like, this is unfortunate because, you know, I wanted to come out and compete and, you know, I'm bummed by that. I think you should let
him do like, that. I mean, like, it's like just discouraging, I guess. Like, you're trying to put in all these hours, you know, preparing for an event because it's like Heart of the Swarm beta, you know, get on there, prepare. And then it's just like,
And hopes and dreams are crushed.
Seriously.
Well, thank you for your call. Good luck. Hopefully see you in an open bracket at a future event, dude. Let's take another call here. We got area code 724. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
What's up, guys? I just wanted to mention the fact that, you know, what if I told you there was mass murders before video games came out. And that's all I really wanted to say. And thank you, DJ Lee, for comforting me when I thought I was going to be a dad. That's all.
Oh, right on, man. Good luck with that. He was almost a father, and he got a pregnancy test done with his girlfriend, and it wasn't a baby. It was
a
scare.
Did he call to say that there was
mass murdering
before video games?
He did, Jeff. That dinosaurs are the reason why people are killing each other. Fucking Jurassic Park. I knew it this whole time.
Yeah, but I know about all those mass murders. They did it because they didn't have video games. They're so bored. Hell. Anyone ever seen Little House on the Prairie? That was the world before video games, guys. I rest my case.
You'd kill people then, too.
Yeah.
Dude, I did. Like, when I was, I would grow up, I'd be 8 years old on a Saturday, right? Now, 8 years old, you're 8 years old, it's Saturday, you turn on one of your fucking 5,000 channels and watch anything, okay? I'd flip through the channels, one would be like fucking Hee Haw. You ever seen that show? Yeah, that'll fucking destroy you for the rest of your life. Another one, some new, anyway.
Bob, can I go play in the long grass? You sure can, but be sure to be back in a couple hours before the sun goes down. You need to wash up before supper. Okay, Father.
It was bad. Oh, my God. Hee-haw was not the shit, man. Not when you're eight and you're like, dude, isn't there something good on? Let's take another call here. Unknown. This is unknown phone number caller from an
Yeah,
unknown.
Hi there. Yeah.
Welcome to the show. Hello.
Yeah, hi there. I'd just like to say I'm a big fan of Idra, and I hope he wins all the upcoming tournaments. I've always been a big fan. And I'm really a big fan of the show, and that's all I really had to say. I just wanted to phone up to say that.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next caller. Area code 303. Hello. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hi. So I've got a big question. I'm kind of an upcoming gamer for, Wings of Liberty, right. And with Heart of the Swarm coming up, it's just like, I'm not even sure whether I should keep going with Wings of Liberty or should I just go to, like, Heart of the Swarm. It's kind of like a split decision. Not exactly sure where popularity is going to go. So I'm just curious what you guys all think about it.
You know what? I talked about this on a previous show. With everyone switching to Heart of the Swarm, but them still supporting Wings of Liberty, it's never been more open for a guy like you to rise up and to maintain the title as the best Wings of Liberty player in 2013, 2014. I think it's all you. I think you should ride it out.
All right, sweet. Thank you guys so much. Thank you for being such great like people in general. Thank you to all four of you guys. Keep doing this, man. You guys are awesome.
Thank you, dude.
Thank you very much, dude.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think that was good advice, Jeff.
Yeah. I'm telling you, man. Totally. There's going to be somebody
there's
who their Twitter
there.
Account will say, under description, number one Wings of Liberty player in the world. You wait.
Play him. We'll have one tournament
viewers.
A year.
It's going to be fucking Liquid Sea, man. Everyone's going to move on. The guy's going to come out of retirement and go to StarCraft.
Here we go. All right, guys. He's been missed for a long time. I'm not even sure that the Muslim has had the honor of being in the presence of this individual. I think maybe he has once or twice, but it's nice to finally welcome back to the show the one, the only Goatlust. Hello, sir. How are you?
Yeah, not half bad, mate.
That's good.
How are you gentlemen going?
I'm fucking great, man. It's good to hear your voice again. How you been?
Yeah, not bad. It's been pretty hot over here, you know.
God.
Pretty fucking sweltering, but, you know, better than fucking freezing, I guess.
Yes, it is. Trust me. I still, like, my basement is perpetually cold, so we've just brought all the meat down here. It's just right behind me, actually. It stays frozen, so it's great. Goatlust, if for those of you who don't know who Goatlust is someone who called in on an early episode of Inside of the Game, and then he just kept on calling. And so every week we took a question for him. He asked the best questions. So,
and his name is Goatlust.
And his name is Goatlust, yes. And he's got a fucking great accent. So with all that put together, he just seems like superstar to bring on the show all the time. Goatlust, it's been a while. Hopefully you got a good question. Drop it on us. What's up, dude?
Yeah. So, Idra, you've been playing good old Heart of the Swarm for a while now, and we're still a fair way off. Do you think you jumped the gun with how early you came in? Do you feel like, you know, you needed to start maybe ideally a little later than you did, or do you think you made the right decision on when to switch?
It's obviously pretty early. The game has changed around a lot, and like maybe experience from early January isn't going to be too important come March 12th, but it's just like, if you look at what I've missed out on, I'm not going to try and say that. I am Poland. I think that's the only big thing I'm actually going to miss. There's nothing else until then except for IPL, which is going to be after the release anyway, so I would definitely have switched to Heart of the Swarm before that, no matter what. So I don't really think there's any cost to it. except for the fact that maybe I'm not playing as good of people. But I've never really had to play the best people in order to push my mechanics. Like, I can do that on my own. And strategy-wise, everything's going to be changing anyway. So I feel pretty comfortable just sitting on top of HOTS, you know, until it actually releases and having experience with every stage of the game and building on that. If there were anything else to do with Wings of Liberty, then I would question it a lot more. But as is, I've missed one event that I might not have even gone to anyway.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough.
And just following up to that, Greg, I mean, do you feel like you're going to have any sort of advantage going into this? Like, or are the changes so heavy that you just, you know, some familiarity, but can you be advantageous in that situation?
It depends on how early other pros switch over, because there's already quite a few pros playing. White Rose playing it full-time as well. T-Funk, or Thorzane, playing on the ID T-Funk, is in second on the HOTS ladder right now, so he's playing a lot as well. All of the EG members are playing at least a little bit on and off. You see Revival stream at a bunch. So there are other pros playing, and we'll see. If they switch over in mass within like the next month, then I'd say it's not a very big advantage. But if a lot of them are still playing Wings of Liberty, especially for Pro League and whatnot, which is a possibility, and for the latest GSL, then I think it's a pretty good head start. It'll last for not particularly long, but it's better than nothing.
Awesome.
All right. So do you think there's anyone who's going to come out swinging, you know, like a bit of a Korth and Luck or, you know, someone out of nowhere or anything like that at the start? Or do you think we've reached a point where, like,
the
player base
no.
is stable enough and, you know, no one's going to come out of nowhere? No one's going to shift around too much? Or do you think we'll see, like, someone like White Ra or something maybe rise above what he's been doing recently?
There will be a little shuffling, of course, but I don't see an unknown coming out of nowhere and actually being competitive. Like, enough skills transfer that if you're good at HOTS, you were good at Wings of Liberty, at least for the first while. And, I mean, new players will rise over time, but it'll be the natural progression. It won't be something being thrown to the top because of Heart of the Swarm. Like, if that was going to happen, it was going to be in the early days when it was less figured out. So we've already had people kind of like that, and I think that phase is pretty much passing.
That being said, I think one of the elements of Heart of the Swarm that is exciting is that towards the end of Wings of Liberty, like, I know that StarCraft II has globbed onto this very race-centric community where such-and-such race is really doing well right now, such-and-such race is doing really well right now. In Heart of the Swarm, it seems to be that it could go in flux a little bit more, which kind of makes it more exciting. And also, we come back to that stage where I think Greg's right. It's a lot of the same talent, so I don't think you're going to see a random guy really tear up the scene like we saw with Wings of Liberty, because it's just so different. It's a different atmosphere that all the RTS guys are here. We're not waiting on anybody. But I think people are going to innovate and reveal that at tournaments or on stream, or it really shakes up the atmosphere enough where there will be some people writing out ideas or concepts, much like early Wings of Liberty, that kind of makes them that person you're describing, but not nearly to the extent, I would say.
Yep, so there'll always be the players who can cope with that more rapid patching sort of environment, which is going to be happening earlier on. But,
And we're going to probably still see quite a few patches and changes even up to release, so it would be interesting.
Yeah, I'd say so. All right, thank you very much, gentlemen.
Goatlust, you're a gentleman and a scholar. We appreciate it. See you next week.
Thank you.
Take care, man. Peace. All right. Thank you for all the callers. We made it through the episode. We'll do our final thoughts, and then officially, I guess we made it through the episode. But thanks for tuning in. I want to give an opportunity, final thoughts, shout-outs, whatever. We'll start with the Muslim. Go.
Well, sorry for disconnecting for such a long time. English internet is pretty terrible. But yeah, this is where I just say my stream and stuff.
Well, you can say whatever you want. You could just be like, I thought this was the greatest show ever. Please, DJ, don't dock me $100 for actually not being on the show for the entire time. You know, whatever, you feel free.
Oh, I do apologize. Well, I'd like to say thank you to EG and its sponsors for supporting me. Intel, Monster, Kingston, Beyond Gaming, InWin, you've all been absolutely fantastic. I'd like to say thank you to you guys on the show. It's been a pleasure. Again, sorry for disconnecting, but yeah, it's always fun hanging out.
It's actually scary doing sponsor shout-outs right now.
Yeah, that's a say.
I had to think about it before I said it.
Ben went into uncharted territory, man. I thought I was almost seeing Ben's life flash before his eyes. Like,
I
like to thank my sponsors. I was like,
excellent. Idra?
I'd like to thank everyone for watching. I kind of missed being able to like piss everyone off and talk about what I think. So it's nice to be back on Inside the Game. I mean, this is our second one, so I guess we should have said it last week, but that was kind of a busy episode.
It was a little busy.
Yeah. So thank you, everyone, for watching. Happy to be back. Also, to thank Team EG and all of our sponsors, Intel, Monster, Kingston, HyperX, Beyond Gaming, and Sapphire.
Are we really going to do this? All three.
I'll let them. They got it.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that Ben already did it. I'm used to being the first EG to do it, so I'll have to think of something
you're
else.
You're right. You're right. Good point, Greg. Good point taken.
So, all that stuff, thank you to them for making this all possible. And follow me on Twitter at Idrajit, IDRAJIT, or watch my stream, twitch.tv/EG_Idra. Thank you.
And Jeff?
As they said, you know, big shout out to all our sponsors, obviously. For me personally, I recently did a show with a group of people that come off the Blizzard forums. And-